Welcome to Torah Tzimcha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Stacey Nechama Goldman, and today we will be studying Sefer Nechamya Perek Yud. As mentioned in the previous summary, this perek is clearly a continuation of the ceremony described in Perek Tet. This is obvious beginning with the first letter of our perek, Vav, which means and. We will repeat it here as we will go more in depth into what the amana is. Yet despite all this, we are making a treaty and writing, and signed thereon are our rulers, our Levites, and our priests. The this, zot, mentioned in the pasuk, clearly relates to the prayer of the Levim from the previous perek, which included a brief history of the Jewish people, their various rebellions, and the Jewish people's return to the land in dedication to Torah and mitzvot, despite the harsh conditions of living under a foreign hegemony. The history highlights how under Jewish sovereignty, the Jewish people did not appreciate everything Hashem had done for them. They rebelled and ended up losing everything with the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. This generation, in contrast, is signing an amana, which we will define shortly, to show their commitment and appreciation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What is an amana? According to the commentary attributed to Rashi, it is a declaration of faith and loyalty related to Emunah. According to Mitzudat Zion, quoting from a pasuk in Malachim Aleph Perek Chafav, it is related to fulfillment or verification. Pasuk Aleph also referred to those who signed this document. Pasuk Bet refers a second time to the signatories in a slightly different language. V'al ha-chatumim Nechemia ha-tirshata ben Chachalia v'tzidkia. And signed thereon are Nechemia HaTershata ben Chachalia v'tzidkia. Ruth Rabbah says that the repetitive language of the word signed, chatum, singular, in Pasuk Aleph, and chatumim, plural, in this Pasuk, indicates two different signings, one signing by the earthly court and the other by the heavenly court. Hence, it was a treaty signed by both parties of the commitment. The first to sign the earthly amana appears to be Nechemia himself. This is indicative of his leadership, to lead by example, as we have seen in previous prekim. Malvim notes that Nechemia lists a total of 83 signatories and understands this to represent the 70 members of the Sanhedrin, plus 13 of those appointed to serve in the Beit HaMikdash, as enumerated by the Rambam in Perek Dalet of Klei HaMikdash. There are 8 separate stipulations that are included in the Amana. Some will sound familiar from other prekim in Ezra and Nechemia, and some will sound more innovative. The first specific commitment concerns intermarriage in Pasuk Lamed Aleph. V'asher lo niten benotenu la'amei ha'aretz, v'et benotechem lo nikach levanenu. And that we shall not give our daughters to the peoples of the land, and we shall not take their daughters for our sons. This has clearly been an issue for the Jews living in the land, as we have seen previously in Sefer Nechemia and also Sefer Ezra. We will see in the remaining prekim how intermarriage was a malignant force, as the enemies Sanballat and Tovia were deeply entrenched in Jewish life and had many allies through intermarriage. Next is Shabbos observant, specifically a derabbanan, or rabbinic degree, combined with a recommitment to Shemitah, both for land and for loans, in Pasuk Lamed Bet. V'amei ha'aretz ha'mevi'im et ha'mikachot, v'chol shaver b'yom ha'shabbat limkor lo nikach miham b'shabbat v'yom kodesh, v'nitash et ha'shana ha'shvi'it u'masha kol yad. And as for the peoples of the land who bring merchandise and all grains on the Sabbath day to sell, we shall not purchase from them on the Sabbath or on holy days, and we shall abandon the land during the seventh year and the loan given by every hand. Malvim informs us that they took upon themselves a prohibition of commerce on Shabbat, even though it is not mentioned explicitly in the Torah. Perhaps this was an attempt to maintain the spirit of Shabbat as a day of rest and not just to keep the letter of the law. Shemitah was especially meaningful, both for creating a just and equitable society, and also to correct what sent them into Galut in the first place, as Rashi explains in Vayikra Chaf Hei Yud Chet, that the 70 years of the first Galut correspond to the years they did not observe Shemitah and Yuval, when they had sovereignty over the land during the first temple period. Next, they commit to giving a third of a shekel every year in Pasuk Lamed Gimel. V'hamadnu aleinu mitzvot latet aleinu shlishit ha-shekel b'shana la'avodat beit Elokeinu. And we set upon ourselves the commandments to give a third of a shekel a year for the service of the temple of our God. There is a debate among the Mefarshim as to the value of this shekel and what it represents. According to some, Mitzudat David et al., This is charity over and above the half shekel commanded in the Torah. According to others, such as Amalvim, this was an adjustment for the weight of the coins in circulation with regard to the biblical value of the half shekel. Next, in order to guarantee the ability to burn all the offerings in the Beit HaMikdash, they organized a lottery to ensure that a different family would cover the expenses for the wood at different times during the year. We mentioned with regard to the census in Perek Zayin that the designated dates for different families were celebrated as that family's personal simcha. Finally, they commit to bringing different offerings to the Beit HaMikdash for the Kohanim. Bikurim, Bechorot for both humans and animals, Challah, which is technically the piece that the baker would separate off from the rest of his or her dough, and Masrot, or tithing. While Bikurim, the first fruits were traditionally brought to the Beit HaMikdash as part of a beautiful ritual, including the famous line we also know from the Haggadah, Arami Oved Avi, the others were meant to be given to whichever Kohen the owner chose. See Rashi on Bamidbar Perek He Pasuk Yud. Why does the Amana stipulate that these gifts must be given specifically to the Kohanim serving in the Beit HaMikdash? Rabbi Breitowitz suggests that this was an effort to create a centralized distribution system for Kohen service. With this in place, the leaders would be able to, one, ensure enforcement as it would be recorded at the temple, two, ensure equitable distribution to Kohanim, as opposed to the more likable Kohanim always getting more than the others, three, maximize probability that the Kohanim would stick around in the Beit HaMikdash, since attendance was down, as we've mentioned earlier, with the low percentage of Kohen families returning to Israel. Pasuk Lamed Tet mentions the Levim in the context of these gifts. Vaya Kohen ben Aaron im HaLevim, Baser HaLevim veHaLevim yalu et Maaser HaMaaser leVeit Elokeinu, el HaLeshakot leVeit HaOtzar. And the priest, the son of Aaron, shall be with the Levites at the Levites' tithing, and the Levites shall bring up the tithe of the tithe to the temple of our God, to the chambers, to the storehouses. The commentary attributed to Rashi explains that this was the protocol, as prescribed in the Torah, for the Levi to take the maser and then separate out 10% to give to the Kohen, who is stationed at the Beit HaMikdash. Malbim, however, has a very different read of the pasuk based on a Gemara in Yevamot 86b. Malbim says that this was actually a punishment to the Levim, as their percentages were even worse than the Kohanim in returning to Israel. The rabbis therefore imposed a fine in which their portion could also go to a Kohen. The Gemara in Yevamot states, it was stated that Amoraim disagreed about the following question. For what reason did the sages penalize the Levites with regard to their tithe by declaring that it may be given to priests as well? Rabbi Yonatan and the elders who were with him disagreed with regard to this matter. One said it was because they did not ascend, i.e. immigrate, to the land of Israel in the days of Ezra. The Perek and the Amana conclude with their commitment to bring the gifts to the Kohanim and not to abandon the Beit HaMikdash. Ki el ha-leshachot yaviu b'nei Yisrael v'nei ha-levi et trumat ha-dagan v'tirosh v'ha-yitzar v'sham klei ha-mikdash v'ha-kohanim v'ha-shartim v'ha-shorim ha-mishorim v'lo na'zov et beit Elokeinu. For the children of Israel and the children of the Levites shall bring the heave offering of corn, wine, and oil to the chambers where the temple vessels and the ministering priests are, and the gatekeepers and the singers, and we will not forsake the temple of our God. May we soon have the opportunity to serve Hashem through the Kohanim and Levim in the third Beit HaMikdash in this way. This shir is dedicated Lezecher Nishmas Marcy Stern, Mincha Yehudas Bas Gedalyahu. She was a dedicated teacher whose deep love of the Sifrei Nevi'im and Shivas Tzion left an indelible mark on her many students.